Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They put on the Huzzah Convention. Huzzah is happening at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine, from May 19th to the 21st, 2023. Come play war games featuring epic historical battles, have fun at a sci-fi and fantasy game, or dig into some board games at Huzzah. Visit mhwa.info for more information. I want to welcome everyone to this episode of Wargaming Recon. We are live from TotalCon 2023. And of course, by the time you're listening to this, it's not live, but you should have been here, could have been here, and maybe next year you will be. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and today I'm joined by an amazing game designer and co-owner of Solarian Games. We're going to be talking about his new upcoming RPG system called Razor. I'm referring to the one and only Mr. Peter Bryan. Pete, how are you?
Hey, do I get frequent guest like award because I've been here so many times?
You have been here many times. I've lost track. Do you know how many it is?
I have no idea.
I should get people who do that.
It's got to be at least five.
Oh, more than that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been years, really, you've been coming on and doing stuff. I love having you on, though, because you always have something really fun to talk about and fun to share. And, I mean, you have a history of doing podcasts, which is cool.
Right.
So you get how it works and everything. And just you work on really cool and interesting stuff.
I just need to finish the cool and interesting stuff that I work on so I can get it out into the world. Because I do that thing where I start five things, finish one, pardon me, and then start five more, and then finish one.
Well, at least you get the one done, right?
Right.
I would be like, I'm going to start five things, get partway on each of them, see something shiny, do five more things, and then maybe make a little more progress on one of them.
Well, that's kind of we've come to that at Solarian. We have, I want to say we have about eight products that are in various stages of almost done. Like, not just in various stages of development.
Yeah.
Various stages of almost done.
You got to get something done, man.
So, you know, we got one of your favorites, Cube of Death.
We'll come back to that later.
Which is essentially done, but needs a tiny bit and
Money. Yeah.
And money. Yeah.
And money.
Yeah.
Well, before we dive into Razor, for those who are not familiar with you, maybe they're new to the podcast, they've just discovered us, why don't you share what your gaming origin story is?
Gaming origin. Okay. So
yeah, like, why, what makes you qualified to be a game designer?
Okay. Well, you know, there's the obvious history that almost everybody who's interviewed and they're asked about how they game, you know, go back to, I was blah, 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 many years old. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like 10 years old and my brother came out from college. This is 1979, came back from college. Tell me about this D&D. I was really intrigued, but you know, he didn't have any of the books or anything. We didn't have a whole lot of money, so like buying something like that was
it's a big expense.
Yeah. So I had actually was living in Florida at the time. I came up to Maryland to live, and I started at a new school. And as I was walking past the library, the local library, Enoch Pratt, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So walking past the local library, they had a sign in the window, and I was like, oh, I remember what he was talking about. And it was a D&D club.
So that's interesting, because back then that would have been so uncommon. Nowadays, libraries carry all the stuff. They do D&D clubs, they run things, and it's treated kind of like, oh, look at this, we're so new and cutting edge that we're doing it in a long time.
Yeah,
you had to like buy it, or a buddy would have to have it, and you hang it on the basement or there, whatever, and work on it.
So in 1980, I'm sitting down in the basement of a library and like little conference, like a room like we're in now.
Yeah,
like,
we're not, in a seminar room.
Not quite an amphitheater, but you know, something they would do presentations or something.
Yeah.
And when that was my Saturday, every Saturday for a while, and then we started playing on our own. And anyway, so flash forward, you know, played all these years, played all these different games, tons and tons of games. One of an early point in my gaming life, I was playing with a group, and one of the guys there decided to make his own game. And I want to say this is like 81, 82. I mean, it might even be one of the library guys.
Okay.
And I got the spark in my head. It's like, oh, I could make my own, right? But I was like 11. So I made one crappy game after another, right? But I just kept doing it. Like every year or two, I would come out with some new game that I made and force my friends to play it. And, you know, and most of it was mostly knockoff. It was pretty much,
But it's a learning experience, right? You have to start somewhere.
Right. So did all that, and then when I got out into the world as an adult, I still kept kind of designing stuff, but the early years a little bit of a struggle, you know, trying to keep food on a plate, So I didn't have much game design time.
No, yeah, you got to work and eat. Important. Pay a bill, maybe.
Right, right. And then even if I had something, what would I do with it?
You didn't have time or energy, right?
And it was, you know, it was early in the very, like, before the internet, and then, like, the very early internet. So yep. no one knew really how to use that to, like, do any of this kind of stuff with it, right?
Yep.
So, like, blah, blah, blah. Get to the last 10 years or so, and I had this podcast, Mythwits, and I had done...
Good show.
Thank you. I had done a lot of amateur stuff, so I had made, you know, big, like, I made, like, almost a 200-page book for Powers, for a plugin for a game.
Cool.
But it was free online. I just made it free online. It was just, you know, here, play with this. If you like it, whatever, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
But then, when I went into the podcast, and we had that for a while, and so it was a video cast, one of the very early video casts, I wound up meeting up with Jason Elliott,
yep.
who had, at the time, it was TSR Games, and they had Gygax Magazine. When I met him, it was because I went up to New York to do to film the open box event for Gygax Games.
Oh, so cool. I never knew that.
Yep. And you know who else was there?
Who?
Little Stephen Porcone.
Oh, no way!
Yeah, and he was just...
Stefan was there. Yeah, oh, my Stefan God. Was there.
And at the time, I mean, he had Dwarven Forge, but he hadn't...
It was early days.
It was the early days. Like, it was before the first Kickstarter.
Oh, so God.
So he still had, you know, it was still just his little, like, startup company.
Oh, my
right,
God.
Before he blew up and became, you know, Stefan, you know.
Why? Well, because right? They got a Kickstarter right now. I think they're going to get to $4 million is what they're looking at.
Oh, my God. Well, good for him. Good
Cities,
for him. That's awesome.
Lowtown, I think, is what it's called right now in 2023, but...
Stefan's awesome. I
love
him.
He's amazing. Yeah, he and I still chat sometimes.
But it's funny. I walk in. I had no idea.
You know who he is.
This is this guy at the end with a chainmail koi fawn.
Yes.
And he's got, you know, and he's got this really cool 3D stuff. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know what 3D. I didn't even know what Dwarven Forge was. That was the first time I ever saw it.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was either until I met him. And I was like, oh, so what do you do? And he's telling me about it. I was like, oh, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's a whole thing.
We could talk for hours about him.
Yeah, yeah. So I got...
he's been on the show.
He has. So I got in with Jason and James and I think Tim
James
was,
Carpio for those.
James Carpio, sorry.
And then, all and wonderful then, people.
I think at the time, Tim Kask was still part of the scene.
Yeah, he was at that point.
Mary Lindholm, quite a few other people. Frank Mincer kind of was sort of...
A little bit, right?
In there a little bit, kind of. And then... around that time, you know, I was doing my podcast.
But what year are we talking about, just for people? Do you remember?
86, 87?
Okay.
No, not 80.
No, oh my later God. Than that.
What the hell's wrong with me?
Well, you're old, and right, so am yeah. I, but... No, it was later than that, because I was around for this.
No, it was like...
It's two... early, people. I'm sorry, we had a late night. A lot of networking happening last night.
I was going to say, I should have said 2013, okay. 2014, somewhere in there. I don't remember. COVID screwed me all up with timelines, too.
No, that sounds about right.
There's like 3 years I always forget about to account for.
You know, well, yeah, the pandemic does...
Right. We were just hanging out the other, like, couple years ago, right? No.
No.
It was a couple years before the pandemic. Oh, crap, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, so... Then there was a whole trademark thing, Gail Gygax, and she yes. challenged the Gygax thing, and Jason was working with Luke and Ernie and Tim Kask and Frank Mincer. So it was all the old original TSR crew.
Yep.
So it was very comfortable having the TSR name and the Gygax magazine. It all made sense, right?
Yeah.
Well, that all kind of went to hell. You know, Gail did the lawsuit. It was just a lot of money to fight it. Things didn't shake out right, so she made an agreement, some kind of agreement or something that or they just decided to. I don't want to speak to the agreement. I don't know.
No, I wouldn't.
Right. So I will.
This has been covered by Tinker's right. Tavern yeah. for anyone who wants right. to watch another video cast.
I'm trying
whatever.
To get through it as fast as I can.
No. Right? Yeah. But if you want the deep dive, yeah. Eric Tinker has done a lot about the ongoing saga. Of
and
this.
I'll probably screw some of this up, so don't take my word for it. So Luke and Ernie were not part of it anymore. And and for whatever reason, I can't remember what the reasons were or what happened, but Tim kind of went his own way and so did Frank. And so it was just kind of Jason and James and Mary and just a handful of people. And then Jason also, Gail was willing to license back the name, like license the name, the Gygax magazine. Jason's like, no, you know what? If they're not going to be part of it, it's not Gygax. Like, where's the guy? The
Gygax didn't feel right.
Yeah, it didn't feel right. It wasn't right for the community. So the magazine got dropped.
It was a good magazine, too.
We focused on Top Secret. I say week. I wasn't there yet.
No, you weren't.
I was doing the podcasting stuff, like the podcasting network and stuff.
Yes.
And so then, I don't know, flash forward again, another TSR debacle with trademarks and all that stuff. Again, go to Tinkar's Tavern, there's a whole thing on it. We have a video on it somewhere on like the Solarian.
And I think I've talked about it at one point or another. I just kind of glossed over it.
I don't want to rehash it.
No.
At any rate, it went to another group of people who have not done the greatest of, how can I say this? Have not done the greatest of justice to the TSR.
They're doing their own thing at their own speed in their own way.
So we're not TSR anymore at all. We don't, nothing to do with it, completely devoid of it. We rebranded to Solarian. And so me, and when we did that, we restructured the whole thing. So it's me, Jason Elliott, James Carpio, Solarian.
Yep.
We have Top Secret, and we're working
Top Secret NWO.
NWO, yeah.
New World Order.
New World Order. And then we just put out Anarchy, James's Game Anarchy.
Yep.
And then we have...
Back that.
Yeah, okay. And then we have several modules and stuff for Top Secret. And then we got another one coming next month. So I don't know when you're here.
So that's going to be in like March 2023.
Yeah. So in March 2023.
What's the name of that one going to be?
Forged with Fire.
Oh, okay. It's a cool name.
Big, beefy adventure, like over 100 pages. And it's also got like a base, like a huge base in it that you can use over and over again.
Okay.
You can use it for any game you want to play. We're going to include the box sets at a real cut rate price, as cheap as we can sell them.
Is this going to be a Kickstarter or is this just, okay, so it's going to be a Kickstarter.
So we're going to do a Kickstarter for the Forged with Fire. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do Backer Kit, and you're going to be able to buy the box set as cheap as we can afford to sell it.
Okay.
And then that way, if you want, you like this intrigues you, but you don't have the Top Secret game, you can get it.
Yep.
Right at a reason, very reasonable price. And we'll probably throw some other packages in there. We'll probably, like, I don't know, because we got inventory of stuff we want to sell it. It doesn't make us.
It's
any money.
It's a really nice box set, and the hardcover book is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice. Who does the maps for you, by the way?
The maps.
Because I know a guy.
You know a guy who does maps?
I know a guy who's a cartographer who. I don't want to speak for him, but I hear he does really good work with maps.
Yeah, well, okay, so we didn't really need a cartographer for this so much that, because it's a modern setting. And,
yeah.
But when it comes to doing the maps of the base, I did those.
Oh, and so is this the one with the gigantic map? Where I remember you working on that.
Yeah, it's as big as, so Jason wanted me to make, he's like, I want you to use Apple Park as sort of like the footprint.
Oh, that makes sense now.
Well, I'm stupid because I don't know anything about Apple Park, right?
So,
I had no idea to tell him no, right? Because if I had known how big that building was, I'd have been like, no, that's ridiculous.
One Apple loop.
So, yeah, I did. So I drafted this whole thing, rooms and all. I put furniture in it and everything.
So I have to ask, when you drafted it, did you put the clear glass windows that people will walk into and not realize that they're there too? Did you do that as well?
No, that's, well, it might be in there, but that's not in the draft.
Okay.
That would be in the description. But I also like laid this building out. Like I said, what had to be where, and because I spent so many years in a younger profession, being a mechanical and electrical engineer, that I have designed interiors a lot. I mean, I'm not an interior designer, but like I've had to lay stuff out. And
yeah.
So I've drafted floor plans. I've drafted so many friggin' floor plans, and I know what goes into a building's infrastructure. This thing has all of that. It's a real build.
That's cool.
So an engineer designed this building.
Okay.
So it was fun. It was cool, but it took me about 6 months just to do.
Well, I believe it.
But yeah, it's going to be a big beefy book. It'll be awesome.
So that's going to be coming out for NWO. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, you kind of work on a bunch of different projects, and then you make headway on one, and then maybe you do a little others. So one of the ones you've made headway on is Razer. But what is Razer, right? Does the name stand for something? Or?
Yeah, it does. Okay. So it's not
an acronym.
All right, hold on. Edit that out.
Thank you, Joshua.
Okay. No, it's not an acronym. So it comes from, it's not Razer as in like a sharp razor. It's a razor as in like to raise a structure.
Ah.
So like if you were to raise a village, you would destroy it to the ground.
Yeah, you're burning it to the ground.
And because
not shaving your face.
Right.
Or your legs or whatever, as the case may be.
And because of what most people do in role-playing games is, I don't know, destroy stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Hack and slash, right?
You, the players, are razors.
Okay, I like
get it.
It?
So
get
that's,
it. Alrighty, that's the system. Okay.
That's where it comes from. And it's also cool sounding.
It but is cool sounding.
It has a Z in it. I love this. I love having a Z in it.
Not a lot of things do the Z thing. Z is a great.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is total tangent. If you were to say the letter Z, how would you pronounce it?
Z.
Okay.
Not Z.
Okay, yeah.
I wouldn't pronounce it Z.
So I've had discussions with people who are American who think that like Zed has been coming into American English.
Right.
And apparently this is being taught in some schools, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, which I was surprised by. So I had to ask, because I wondered if it was like an ageling, like, I mean, you and I aren't that far in age.
I guess if you're doing it, saying it over a radio or something, it makes it clearer.
Maybe, yeah. But I think of the alphabet song, ABC, right. And then AB said, like, Zed? I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize to
X,
all of our
Y, Z.
British
and that. That's not
the listeners. It doesn't work.
It sounds
for me.
Like there should come at something after it.
We're just
like,
the colonists here.
Like Ziga Z, and you're done, right? But Zed, like, Zed.
Zed. It's angry like German. Again, no offense to my German audience. I'm part German, but like German, I hear German, and you can be like, "I love you very much. You're wonderful," and it sounds really angry to me.
Yeah, I know. I love German though.
It's a cool language.
It is awesome. It's like Klingon in a way. It's just like, raw. I love it. Actually, I love it.
There's all these like, hard sounds. You don't know what it is, but like it's something.
You mean what you're saying.
Yes, you do. Yes. I am so happy to see you today.
Guten Tag. But yeah, so Razer is it's built to be a very flexible modular system.
Cool.
At its core concept. That is like, that was one of the things it had to be. If it wasn't that, I wasn't going to do anything. So it has a very simple set of rules. You have, you know, like just a couple stats, and a couple skills, some abilities and weapons and stuff. That's it, right? Real simple.
Cool.
You could teach it to, a five-year-old could play it, I think. Maybe not, I don't know. I've never tested with a five-year-old, but I'll tell you this. A 10-year-old would have zero issue playing the easiest version of Razer.
What about an 8-year-old?
Yeah, I think an 8-year-old could handle it. Sure, okay. Sure. I'm pretty sure. We had a girl playing last night, and she was 13, and she seemed to grasp it better than a lot of the adults.
That doesn't surprise me.
Right. She was very good. She was very good. So it's modular, so that you can plug stuff into it. You can replace pieces of it with whatever complexity you want to. Mm-hmm. So the big reason for that was is because I want to encourage other people. It's going to be an open system that anyone can develop for.
So it's going to use the new open license that you guys are working on, right?
Yes. Yep. It'll be part of our. It'll be one of our open license.
We can talk about systems. That a little later, but yeah.
And what I have so far, a big part of what I've designed so far, is the just the basic book that would go to a designer. Like I wouldn't sell this book, mm-hmm. right? This book goes to somebody who wants to make it.
Okay.
And here's all the tools you need. Pick out what you want, mm-hmm. put it into your game, modify what you need. But this is like your developer.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because there's also, it goes all the way up to like super complex too. So you can pull stuff out, put stuff in. So you could have up to 6 stats. You could have tons, like I think it's over 100 skills with specialties and stuff like that. Area hits you can do. I mean, like, I'm developing a detective engine.
Oh, that's cool.
So because characters, I mean, like when you're on an adventure, you're kind of always a detective in a way, you know, because you're on mm-hmm. a mission, you're trying to solve something, right? There should be some level of solving something, or you're just killing stuff. But if you're not just killing stuff, doing something.
Yeah.
And with a detective engine, I'm just calling it that. It's investigator engine, whatever you want to call it, right? It takes into all the account, all the things that could go into trying to solve a mystery.
Okay.
I should probably go with the mystery into it. I should. That sounds better.
That does sound better.
All right.
You heard it here first.
So you can like, if you question people, that gives you stuff. If you do like an autopsy, that gives you stuff. That feeds into it. So all this stuff feeds into it, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the end, it will give you like clues, and then, you know, like maybe like a big final roll at the game master. Like, okay, you have solved what you were looking for. And it could be used for anything. It could be small, big, like small mystery, big mystery. Yeah. But I feel that in all my time role playing, it's always focused on the combat, like magic.
Yes.
And you can do other stuff. Like all the other stuff seems to just be like fluff or something for the game.
Yeah, people gloss over it.
Not every game. So there's
no, but a lot.
There's some games that do really well with that. But what I have found is there's a lot of games that do that one other thing really well. Mm-hmm. So it's like a detective game, so it does detective stuff really well, but not everything else is extra.
Yeah.
I wanted to develop. I'm going to make all these different engines. So I've already developed a social engine.
Okay.
So like I'm going to go into a ball. I'm going to go to a party, and we're going to part of this adventure is going to consist in the party at this party, not like a character party, but like, you know, like you're at a party drinking wine and stuff. Yeah. Right. and you're trying to get information or something. You're trying to figure something out. So we're going to go to this party and we're going to try and do the spy thing and find information out. Mm-hmm. And there's all these rules on how to do stuff, like how to interact, how to have fun, how to entertain people, all that stuff. And all your other, like a lot of your skills, these other skills that you have on your character sheet, you'll get to use as much as people combat, right?
Oh.
So I have more and more and more of these that I'm developing. There's going to be a survival and be a craftsman engine, mm-hmm. so that you'll be able to do all these things. Now, again, modular. If you don't want that kind of complexity in your game, just don't put it in.
Yeah, there. Leave it out.
Don't include it. And if you're playing and it's not in your version of the game, but it's in another version of the game, and you guys want to bring it into your your setting or your game or whatever you're running, like as a homebrew,
yeah.
you just yank that thing out and put it into yours. So that was the big concept on Razor. That's what it is. And so I don't want to say it's hard to say, is it easy, is it hard, because it depends, right? Is it crunchy, is it light, is it storytelling, whatever? Yes, it is all those things, depending on what your group wants to do with it.
It can be whatever you like.
Another cool feature to it is you can use, so long as it's not some kind of crazy special die, seven-sided or something like that. It has to have an even distribution. So it has to be like, you know, it has to have even numbers on it.
Yep.
So fudge dice doesn't even work because fudge.
Oh, true.
Right, because you have positive, negative, and blank.
Right.
That doesn't work.
No.
But other than that, you can use any dice you want when you play, and you can mix them up. You can just grab a handful of random dice and roll them. You resolve it by doing.
Could you use a coin?
You could use a coin. That would take forever. But yes.
Yeah, but I mean, use a coin. Maybe that fits some sort of theme.
Now,
I don't know.
I know some. Some people love rolling a bunch of dice and some people don't. If you don't like rolling a bunch of dice, may not be the system for you, because you will on the regular roll 8-10 dice at a time.
So I come from miniatures gaming, yeah. like 40K land, where 8 or 10 is a small number of dice.
I'm just saying.
No, I had someone last night. My 40 dice, I gotta roll. And you take your bucket and you dump it on the table.
I had somebody last night do something crazy and wound up rolling like 30 dice.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, because you're just looking for successes, and I didn't want to do a whole lot of math. I didn't want people to have you look at your, like, if you rolled 3d6, you wouldn't go, okay, we got a 3, and then a 4, and that's 7. And then you have the modifier, and then this, and that. You just say, all right, I got all these successes. So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 successes. 6 is my number.
Okay.
Right? And I know I'm not the one, I didn't think of that. I know.
No,
there's
I know
other games that do that, but that was something I was like, yeah, I want that in there.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And then, let's see, what else about Razor that would be
important? So why don't you talk to us about, you were talking about characters a little bit.
Sure.
How does character creation work?
So this is a point, sort of a point, point-based system.
So is it like a point buy? You have, say, 20 points and you spend it on the characters?
Yeah, it's basically a point buy system.
Okay.
The super easy versions actually have levels like D&D would.
Okay.
Right? Because that's easy to like, you don't have to like worry about the nuances of every little piece of your character. It's like, I'm level this, which means all of these things are this, right? So for the super easy, there's the level jumps or whatever. But you can easily replace that with just experience points.
Alrighty.
So, and there will be no levels. Like, you'll have skill levels, but there's no like overall character level.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever your level is, whatever all this other stuff does for you.
It's not like, oh, look, now I'm level 4 right. monk or whatever. Right. Yeah.
There are, in the easier versions, there are archetypes that kind of channel you into things, because, you know, if you're playing an easy game, you don't want to have, the less decisions you have to make and the less construction you have to do, the easier it is.
Yeah, you want to streamline stuff, like especially for a convention, for example.
Right.
You're going to want to streamline as much as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But when you step this up to more complex systems, that goes away. There's really none of that.
Okay.
Your character is whatever you...
That's cool. So you have your points, you assign it to whatever it is.
If you make a bunch of stuff that makes you a warrior, then you're a warrior.
Okay. I like that. It really allows you to customize what you're going to be doing for a person.
And so to show some of the flexibility, I got very ambitious here this week.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, very ambitious.
So it was fun to watch.
I'm actually running 3 different versions of Razor.
Okay.
Or not I. We,
yeah, the so team, your team, right?
David Benavides, Troy City Mysteries, Urban Fantasy version, which is a bit more complex than the things I was running. I'm running Grit and Grimoire.
Okay.
And those two are very skirmishy, they're the lightest flavor thing possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because last night I did an event with 16 people.
Okay.
And... So I ran a table of 16 people battling it out, and it was an arena fight, because that's all that is, a big arena fight. Yep. So it keeps it nice and simple. There's not, you know, I don't have to come up with adventure things. Put your things on the table, kill each other, and get points. Get a lot of points. And then Grit and Grimoire is basically, it's literally dungeon crawling, and there's really not much else to it.
Okay.
So the idea would be like, what's the best part of playing D&D, right? The dungeon crawl, right? So this, I took the concept of More Blood, where it's just, you know, characters on a mat killing things. I said, oh, I could do that with fantasy. So basically, if you're playing Grit and Grimoire, you're pretty much like, okay, so you're in town, you get hired, you go to the dungeon. All right, put your figures down, let's do some dungeon stuff. It'd be great if you have Dwarven Forge stuff. It'd be fantastic. You have nice marrying of those two.
I saw someone actually have some Dwarven Forge stuff here this weekend. I was excited to see it.
How many times are we going to?
I was about to be like, you know, they should really sponsor the show, but I can't say anything because Steph Run's amazing. And a while back, he sent me just tons of stuff.
Yeah, so it's they kind of sponsored it for a while.
Yeah, no, they're wonderful people. I can't recommend them enough. But yeah, like whatever. Like you can use. Doesn't Gale Force 9 have like their own like dungeon tile kind of thing do? Yeah. Or like everyone's doing it.
Yeah, I bought a bunch of 3D ones. I'm gonna 3D print.
Oh, okay, you got the STL files.
Yeah, so I got STL files. I did. I went to Hero Forge, made a bunch of figures, downloaded them, and then I bought some stuff. I can't remember one of the websites. Mm-hmm. They had all these like base building tiles and stuff. So I downloaded the and I have access to a bunch of 3D printers. And I'm gonna do that. I was gonna do that for this event. But I got so busy. I was like, oh, it's like it's gonna take me a while to print these out, which I can do. I could have gotten that done in time, but then I'd have to paint everything.
And it takes a while.
I don't have time. I can't. So I scrapped that. I'll do it next year.
Yeah, when you have more time for it. Nothing wrong with that. So usually with an RPG, there's a desired kind of setting or aesthetic to it, or you know, like how, say, if you want to play cyberpunk, you do cyberpunk, or you do Shadowrun, or something like that. What would you say is kind of the setting or the genre that this would fit into for Razer?
What would fit into? Oh, so Razer,
like where do you see Razer in the RPG landscape of genres? For example?
So Razer falls into the category of like core system without a setting.
Okay.
Right. So if you're just talking about Razer.
Yeah,
right?
The core. Yeah.
So that it's a core system, and it was purposely designed to be able to make just about any genre.
Okay.
Right. We'd have to do. You'd have to.
Are there any that you think really wouldn't work for it?
Yeah, I was gonna say that the only one of them I think it'd be tough. I don't think there's anything you can't do with it, but.
Just more challenging to kind of get through it.
The more challenging one would be like high level super. That would be a little tough, just because of the way the system works. If you had somebody with Superman strength in my game, you would literally kill everyone instantly, obliterate them, unless they were super durable.
Mm-hmm.
But like if Superman hit, you know, Batman, he would be bat mush, right? It's just the system's not, it's very linear. So like in superhero games, they generally tend to kind of do like a curve.
Yeah.
Right? So as you get more powerful, you can lift more things, you don't do damage that's indicative of what you could do. So like if you could lift an airplane, punched anyone who wasn't superhuman, it'd literally come apart.
Okay.
Like The Boys. You ever watch The Boys? They do it well. That would be an example of what a powerful superhero system would look like in Razer. So yeah, you know what? I could do The Boys. If you want to
do The Boys,
we could do The Boys. That would be easy.
Okay.
But no, there's no real setting for the core system. But the settings I do have to speak to that, because I have some settings.
Yes.
We have More Blood, which takes place in the hold on 1 second. More Blood takes place. I want to say 300-400 years, 500.
Okay.
It's after the world has kind of come apart, and people now live in Arcology. Sort of like Logan's Run-ish, or like how old are you? Right. Hunger Games-ish.
Okay.
Where you have these mega like
I skew older, but okay. Right,
but like where you have like a city, you know, and then everything outside of the cities are like wastelands. And stuff.
Yeah.
But within the cities, everything's great. You know, they basically took all the knowledge that we had and stop trying to, you know, world conquer and all kind of stuff.
Okay.
Because there just wasn't enough resources to do that.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Societies and all, like 1/1000th.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but because of all of the social changes due to all that apocalyptic stuff, they've adopted this warlike, right? Because nobody actually kills anyone.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's what they do in this arena. But they're only killing clones. So you're all clones.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not going to go into the deep dive on that, but I've got a whole philosophical thing I'm putting all of for a really simple board game, which doesn't make sense, but it's what I do.
No, but hey.
But anyway, so that's More Blood.
And so that's like the bread and circus.
That's the bread and circus, right? Okay. You're in this arena, you're killing each other. There's all these rules for getting points. You're trying to get points so you can you smack talk people. There's a lot of WWE in this. You know, you get one of the things is you get points for the most spectacular kill.
Oh, okay, right? Okay.
And if you have kids, I'm going to tell you, it's probably not a game for kids. Mm-hmm. Unless you don't let them read the rule book and you just play the game. That would be, okay. You could do that. But don't let kids read the book, because I leaned heavy into the philosophical concept of what these people are going through. So they have, you know, there's terms like, you know, this weapon kills with bloody deliciousness, right? So it's rough concepts. Like,
yep.
Like my daughter can read it now, but a couple of years ago, I wouldn't even let my daughter read on this one.
Mm-hmm.
We're not edgelording or anything. It's not curse words or any of that kind of stuff. I'm not getting graphic in that way, but I do use very colorful in explanations.
Yeah, and I mean, you obviously have to gauge your audience and figure out what works best.
And the points that you get are for doing, like I said, doing things like...
Here, boy!
For doing things like most spectacular kill and stuff like that. I did avoid one thing, though. I wanted to have a vest you could wear that would explode for extra points.
Oh, okay.
Right? So you could run into a group of people, blow yourself up, kill a bunch of them, and get like a ton of points.
Alrighty.
Right? But I didn't call it a suicide vest because I didn't want to use that word.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of what you're doing, but I'm trying to stay away from that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, especially nowadays, it has that, you know, ethnic, religious, political kind of ramification.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also, I mean, it's a trigger for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's fun for this setting, but I didn't want all that other crap around it.
You don't want the baggage.
So I just called it the Hail Mary vest.
Okay.
Because you're doing a Hail Mary for extra points.
Already.
Right, because you're not coming out. You're not going to get any more points after this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see how that goes. I mean, if people don't like it, I take it out. It's not that. But that's that setting. And then I have Grit and Grimoire, which is, again, there's really no setting. That one actually has zero setting. That is, the idea would be you would take one of your modules.
Okay.
And you could just easily convert stuff over, or you could easily write modules for this. Because it wouldn't really be modules. It'd be a map. Like, you could do a map, say what's in the rooms, and then you're done.
Okay.
You put your characters down and you play. So it's for fast play. It's kind of almost a board gamishing, you know. So there's that. And then... I'm working with David Benavides. It's looking like he's going to do his Troy City Mysteries, which is an urban fantasy type of thing.
Yeah, you'd think Dresden Files.
Dresden Files, right.
For those who know, yeah.
James wants to do Death Race Z. So, going back to the Easy System, Death Race Z is it's like the old Death Race.
Oh, okay.
But it's zombies. So you go out you go out into the wastelands, and it's like I was supposed to have the mid '80s grindhouse feel to it, and your John Corman feel, and you're driving down the road, and you're supposed to run over zombies and get points for them, and attack each other, so it's sort of like Car Wars and stuff.
A little Mad Max going on.
Mad Max, yeah. So it's going to be that, but it's not going to be. I'm not really sure how James is going to do this. I don't know if he's going to actually put boards down, or is it going to be theater of mind.
Well, I was going to ask about that. Like,
how that's going
to
work.
How accessible is it to either go full theater of the mind, or to do like the whole thing with minis, and you do a whole setup or some blending of it? Like, if you personally feel it excels more with one than the other.
So with More Blood, you have to have the board. There's no way. Can't get away from the board. That's just, if you can't set a board down, you can't play that.
You could do a virtual though, right?
Yeah, I guess you could do a VTT.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. There's no reason why not. You need to have a board. You need to see where figures are.
You need the visualization.
It's really important.
Yeah.
Grit and Grimoire, I ran one here where we did theater of mind. It worked out.
Okay.
So that's, it's better to have a, it would be more fun with it, but you don't have to. Death Race Z, I don't know how James is doing that. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know, I don't know if he's going to have a board.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's cards involved.
Okay.
So I'm not 100% sure.
Work in progress.
Yeah.
No, that sounds interesting.
But we have got a ton of other ones. I don't know that I'm ready to talk about some of the other ones, but there is, I will say this much. There is another fantasy one that's very robust. There is...
When you say fantasy, what do you mean?
Fantasy setting.
Like, no, I know, but like, Because there's different degrees of fantasy.
Not high fantasy.
Okay.
It's actually kind of...
Are we talking like sword and sorcery fantasy or...
I would say sword and sorcery.
So more like a Conan sort of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
There's... what was the other one we have on deck? Oh, yeah, yeah. So David's doing the Twisted City Mysteries. I wanted to do my own version.
Bless you.
I want to do my own version of my own horror, my own dark horror.
Oh.
So do like a Cthulhu level dark ones and stuff.
Okay.
But I'm going to take a stab at trying.
Oh, so you wouldn't rely on Lovecraft, really?
No.
You might be inspired by,
yeah,
perhaps.
I'd be inspired by, but there'll be no vampires or werewolves or anything. So
okay.
I will come up with all my own stuff.
That sounds challenging. Interesting, but challenging.
So I don't know when that's going to happen because that's
tomorrow. No,
no,
that's
a big challenge I'm giving myself. I'll tell you. So one of the things that's held me back from ever releasing games in the past was I've actually come up with stuff that was good,
mm-hmm,
right? But it was pretty much a rehashing of something already out there. It was like my flavor of this.
Yep.
It wasn't until I got to Razor where I finally had something where I was like, okay, I have something. There are things that are actually bringing something new.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth doing. So I always look for that worth. So again, if I did a horror game, I'm not going to do anything that's based off of Lovecraft,
yeah,
because it's already been done, and it's already been done really, really well. So there's no real reason to do that. And with the way Razor's made, you could literally just convert all that stuff over easily.
Okay.
So, like, why just?
No, that makes sense. So what were some of the challenges and obstacles that you faced while you were working on this?
With Razor.
Yeah, like when you were creating it. And then how'd you deal with those?
So this actually has gone very smooth. There hasn't really been too much in the way of challenges. I mean, the only real challenge is finding the time to do it.
Right? Mm-hmm.
The challenges all came before, everything that led up to this.
Okay.
So, like I said, I made other games and did other things. Those were all super challenging because it's always trying to be creative enough, but not too creative where people are like, I don't know, right? So there's some stuff I've come up with that's really abstract. And I was like, nah, I barely get this. No one's going to, right? I made it, get it, right? So then, but yeah, that time out. I lost my place.
It's because you're old.
Good thing we're editing, right?
Oh,
right.
We're supposed to edit that out? No,
I
think we're keeping that in.
All right. Okay, so challenge, right.
Yeah, the challenges and how you overcame them. You said a lot of them were leading up to the point before you got to actually starting on it.
Yes.
And that it's been pretty streamlined since. And
though there's also things that I thought were going to be fantastic. In my head, they worked out great.
Yeah.
Right? And then I did this whole like design thing. I took it to a convention and tested it out, and it was a disaster.
Such as?
So I had this area hit thing where like there was a bunch of areas on your body you hit, and then each area had like its own kind of hit points that would disable it.
Kind of like Battletech?
Yeah, it turned people into mechs.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Exactly. Somebody's like, oh, we're playing mechs. I'm like, okay, that's not the flavor I was going for. Right. So I've learned some lessons. You know, I've made stuff. There's been things where I've made stuff really, really crunchy. And then I was just like, I want somebody to buy into what I'm making them, you know, take a one-on class. To even get to playing it. I was like, no.
Yeah, you can't do that.
I basically got into my own head and was just like, yeah, I'm creating the greatest thing ever. And it sucked. It was horrible. But I finally got to where I realized, okay, I've got something here. This is where I've been trying to go for a very long
time. Mm-hmm.
And then I also have partners. So I'm not doing all this stuff on my own.
True.
I have, you know, and there's a company established. So I have an outlet. So when I make something and we want to put it into the market, we have that. We have, it's all set up. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do my bit. Jason does his bit. James does his bit. If we're going to kickstart it, we kickstart it. Once it's kickstarted, we put it in our store, which is already established.
Yeah.
Things go to our warehouse where people can buy them.
So nice.
It's all set up.
You don't have to like keep everything at your house and do all the things.
Yeah. And when you're a one person show, and I would advise anyone, anyone who's out there who's design their own game, because there's plenty of us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the poster child. If you're working by yourself, I'm going to tell you it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's a bad idea.
You need other people, someone to bounce ideas off of, someone to tell you when you've gone wrong.
Because once you get into it and you're like, okay, I did all this time designing this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Yes.
Okay? So now you have to be a publicity person. You have to, and you have to have marketing. If you don't have marketing, I'm telling you right now, if you don't have marketing, you're done.
Yeah, then no one's going to find it. No one's going to care.
You're not going to sell. You're going to sell them to your friends.
Yeah, which is fine.
And
but
a few people at a convention or whatever. If you want to sell 100 copies lifetime of your thing, then by all means, don't do any marketing. You know,
marketing's so important.
But so you have to know marketing.
Yep.
Who's building your website? Are you building your website? Are you paying somebody to build your website? Are you are you going to do distribution? Are you going to, who's doing your inventory? Mm-hmm. Who's going to your conventions? Who's, you know, so there's all these things that you now need to be, and you need to be good at all of them. You be as good at those things as you were at me. And that is not something one person should expect of themselves.
No, it really does take a village. It
takes a village. And, you know, partner up with people. My big advice would be to work for someone else first. Get your name
out
there.
I like that.
Get your name out there. Become Monty Cook and then do what Monty Cook did, mm-hmm. right? Get a fan base because, you know, like with Kickstarters, right? You have to have a community.
You do.
Like they tell you, don't start a Kickstarter with, don't build your community with your Kickstarter.
No, bad
idea.
Doesn't
work that way.
No, it does. And a lot of people think, oh, I'm going on here and they'll just find me. No, yeah. Some will, but not really. Yeah. You need to have your group of people who you know will, like, then go to it and then you direct them to
it. Here's a good example. We're always looking for people who can develop stuff, mm-hmm. right? If you are a creative person and you got a really good work ethic and you've got something that's really awesome that you're developing, you know, we might pick it up.
Okay.
And publish it, maybe. If you want to use one of our systems, it's a little more likely.
Well, yeah.
Or you can just use our system, take all the work that we did and wrap your setting around it. And, like, you know, 80% of the work has been done for you, like the mechanics wise.
Make it easy.
And we've play tested it. The rubber has hit the road with our stuff. It's mm-hmm. been in front of multiple people that we don't know that are very critical and have given us feedback.
That's good.
And then we take those changes back. I got a whole list of notes from last night. Gonna make changes. I ran the game for 15 at one time. So that was like, that was drinking from a fire hose, man.
Yeah, that's trial by fire, man.
So that would be my advice to that end. That's where my trials and tribulations came from. I didn't do those things. That's where mm-hmm. So that's where this whole conversation was going.
Yes.
What were my trials and tribulations? I didn't do what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. Right? And what I just said, you really should do. That would be my advice.
Okay. For those who want to get their hands on Razor, how are they going to be able to?
All right. So right now, nothing is ready.
Okay.
Because right? I've been in heavy development on that. And we also have our Lucky 13 system that I have to support as well.
No, of course.
Because that's our flagship right now.
Yep.
More Blood, it will be out this year. We are absolutely releasing it this year.
Like third quarter, fourth quarter?
Probably.
2023.
Well, so we got Forge of Fire we have to do. You can't run more than one Kickstarter at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't want to. That's
No, it's don't.
You're insane if you do that. If you could do that, you'd be insane.
Do not.
So we're gonna do Forge of Fire. Then okay. we gotta resolve that. So get them all out, distribution, all that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Make sure we take care of that business.
Of course, you want to complete that. And
then we have like three projects jockeying for the next one. Right? There's Cube of Death.
Okay.
There's More Blood, mm-hmm. And Kiss My Grits. So those three games. Those are three games that are ready to go into production. Mm-hmm. We could do a Kickstarter for any one of those first.
Okay.
Because they're done enough that we would just kind of wrap some stuff up and send them out. But we wouldn't, because we have a policy that we finish the product before we put it out on Kickstarter.
I like that.
We use Kickstarter to buy enough copies to bring each individual price down enough to make it affordable. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're using the Kickstarter for, is to get the inventory and buy and get your economies of scale.
Of course.
So that we're not buying a book, paying for a book, and then selling it to you and making nothing.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because then we're working for nothing.
You can't do that.
So if we can get a Kickstarter going, get enough people to buy into it, then we can buy them cheap enough so that everybody's happy. You get a cheap product, we get mm-hmm. some money, and everyone's happy.
Okay. So when the time comes, Razor will be Kickstarted.
Yes.
Come out, and that'll get you the core toolkit, so to speak.
I'm not going to Kickstart the core product. I'll Kickstart More Blood.
Okay.
The core product is never going to be sold.
Okay.
What that is if
that's just going to exist.
That's going to exist. And if you want to develop a Razor, a game based on Razor,
you just grab
engine,
it and you do.
You grab it and you make it. You take the book that I put out mm-hmm. that will be free. You can download whatever, do whatever you want with it. And then you'll make whatever it is you want.
Okay.
And I encourage that. I love seeing people create stuff. So, I've had people say, what if they make something that's like yours? Great.
Okay.
I don't care. There's enough room for all of us.
Yeah.
Jason, James, and I also, our day jobs, we make, you know, we have full-on careers.
Yeah.
This is fun. Like, mm-hmm. if we make some money, our biggest goal is to make enough money to keep to keep this business afloat.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it's not coming out of our pockets. Because right now, we're, Right now, we're paying you all to take our games. I'll put it that way.
No, I hear you. Well, I mean, so obviously not the same, but for a very, very long time, this podcast was, okay, here I pay the bills again and again and again.
Yeah.
And now we're at the point where, like, we're revenue neutral. Or maybe we make, like, I don't know, $5 at the end of the year or something. But, like, basically, I want to be revenue neutral.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be coming out of pocket because I get two kids and I'm paying tuitions and all that kind of stuff.
And it's not like that, but you do a lot of work. You should get something for doing all your work. You shouldn't have to pay.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to pay other people so that you can work.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And then for those who are curious, mm-hmm. such as myself, Cube of Death.
All right.
So you said it's basically Kickstarter ready.
It's, yeah.
It depends on what the decision will be for that.
Yeah.
So what do I have to do, and what do my community have to do to make Cube of Death?
The next one?
Yeah, after. Because, like,
I don't know.
I love Cube of Death, and yeah. I've been waiting, and, like, I want it.
Right. You know, it's funny because I bring it to conventions every year, and every year people want to buy the damn thing. And
yes.
I'll tell you what the holdup on that is.
Uh-huh.
So big holdup on that is card games are expensive to
use. True. And there's a lot of cards in this game.
It's a lot of cards. It's got a lot of cards in it. So it's just not cheap. It's very expensive to produce this. Even piece part is expensive to produce it. I don't want to sell you something that's $75 because that's what it costs to make, right?
Yeah.
So I have to buy, for that one, absolutely 100% have to buy economies of scale.
Yes, you do.
Because you can't download it as a PDF. So I if I don't print 1,000 of these, mm-hmm. there's no point in doing it at all.
Okay.
Right? So when I started the Kickstarter a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
it was right before the pandemic.
Yep.
Right? Which that's not part of this. Well, it will become part of this story. So we did the Kickstarter, and we screwed up in our setup. And Kickstarter is kind of rigid so that – and I understand why it has to be. But, like, once you start your Kickstarter, you can't make a – there's certain adjustments you can't make.
No, I know.
And we realized there was a mistake we did.
Something with the shipping, right?
Yeah, it was the shipping, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was under the understanding the way we were setting it up, and this is our fault. We screwed this up. So I'm not blaming Kickstarter or anybody else, but we thought the way we had set it up, the shipping was going to be separate from the pledge level.
Yeah.
And while the pledges were going up, and it looked like we would probably make our goal, it wasn't really our goal, because that just covered a lot of half of it was the shipping.
Yeah, if the pledge was like $10, like $7.50 of it was shipping.
Right.
Or something.
So we're like, no. So I had to pull it, right? Because I didn't want to get stuck with, shelling out thousands of dollars of my own money.
No, you can.
To give people my game that I did all this work on.
Yeah. I mean, you're already giving it basically anyway, right?
Right. So, and when I say this, you got to understand, I probably got 1,000 hours in. So imagine.
Yeah, you do.
Imagine if you worked 1,000 hours and didn't get a penny for any of it. Would it? Mm-hmm. Would you even want to do anything like that again?
I know.
No. So we figured out. We got it all figured out now. So
okay.
We're going to use Backer Kit because you can separate out the
shipping. Shipping comes separate. Right. Yeah.
And we can put add-ons and stuff like that on much easier with Backer Kit.
It doesn't
screw up the way you fund it. Right?
No, it doesn't.
Look, if we put a Kickstarter out, you're getting it.
Okay.
Period. If I have to take out a loan, you're getting it because I'm not. We're not Ken Whitman. We're not one of these, right? We're not one of these folks who, and you're going to get it in a timely manner.
Yes.
Which is why Forge of Fire is completely done. It's ready to go to the printers right now. We could hit the send button, go to the printers, and be ready to go.
Cool.
So the minute it fulfills, we're just going to start working on getting it out.
Yeah, you just put it out.
And you'll see it as fast as humanly possible.
Okay.
So Cube of Death. That's where the problem is. Cube of Death. Cube of Death has a very high production bar. So that's why it's always been really weird and questionable. Mm-hmm. Because when we had to do that and we were like retooling and we're going to fix it, the pandemic hit. And then it was very uncertain as to who was going to have money, if there was going to be any manufacturing anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, all the supply chain shipping, problems and everything. Right?
So then that started.
Trying to get space on a boat.
Right.
Like just trying to get a container and hoping you could do that.
Or get
and
that,
the price of containers went through the roof too.
Right, they did. And the prices were all over the place.
It was impossible to track.
So if I was like, I'll do a Kickstarter and it looks like we can afford it. And then like a week later, we can't afford it.
Well, like not even a week, like 5 minutes later, it changed, right?
Right. And then there was the whole Trump was like talking about all these tariffs.
Oh, right, yeah.
On China, and we were gonna have printing in China. I'm like, oh, I don't know what that means. Is it gonna include games? Is it not gonna include games? How much is it gonna include games?
That's hard.
You know, so it was just like, oh, it's too uncertain. Kids can't take that chance.
No.
So we're really hoping that we can print either in the U.S. and we're also looking at Mexico.
Oh,
I don't want to print in China. I'm done. I'm done with China. I don't want to print there. First off, takes forever for everything to get here. Shipping's ridiculous. And of course it is, right?
It
makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes absolute sense.
And not only that, we got to get it from China to San Francisco and then to everywhere else in the world.
True.
So we're not going to use China. We'll probably either use Mexico or U.S. if we can.
Okay.
If we can get someplace that will be affordable enough.
Yeah, you need to hit your price points.
Because, I mean, yeah, you can print in America if you can print 100,000 of something.
True.
Right. Because I'd love to keep the money here, but, I don't know.
Whatever. You got to do what you do.
Yeah. So we'll see. TBT. We're sending out quotes. We're going to get quotes this week when we get back.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get quotes for all the stuff. And we're going to sit down and we're going to have a meeting. Like, what makes the most sense right now to do?
To go do.
So it's either going to be one of those three.
Okay. Well, just
And then it's going to be the next one of those three. And then the next one of those three.
Okay.
So I would really love it if we could get all these out this year.
That'd be awesome.
Pretty ambitious.
It is a little ambitious. But
we'll see.
Okay. It's just whenever you're on, you don't have to ask about Cuba the Death.
Sure.
It's just one of those things. So for
if anybody on your show, because I know you promoted it.
Yeah.
Any of you that's listening, if you backed it originally, you're still getting your unique card that goes to the original backers.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very nice.
It's a unique character. You'll have one of the character types that no one else will have.
Okay. That's very cool. All right. And then for people who want to just kind of keep up to date with what's going on with Razor, what's going on with you and Solarian, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best place... Honestly, the best place is like social media because that's
like TikTok.
No, Jonathan.
I'm sorry. Yes, I forgot you're old. Yeah.
No TikTok.
We're not on the TikTok.
Not on it.
I'm not either. on the interwebs.
We may be forced to go to it if it becomes any more freaking popular. Oh, God. Right? You know. But
I don't want to make dancing videos. Right. I'm sorry.
Me, Jason, and James will be doing. You know. Doing Macarena or something, right?
Yeah, no one wants to see me dance. No. I'm not doing it.
So the best place to find it, you get just on Facebook, Solarian Games.
Okay.
Same thing, Instagram, Solarian Games.
So you're on the gram.
Right. Twitter, Solarian Games. I don't do the Twitter.
I was going to say, you guys are still on the Twitter. Okay.
Jason does Twitter.
Okay.
I don't do Twitter. I don't like Twitter. So I don't really do it.
But are you guys doing anything else that got Mastodon kind of became popular or something?
So we have a Mastodon site.
Okay, I mean, because like I do, but
I don't do anything with it. I don't know if James does anything.
I don't do a whole lot with the Mastodon.
So I don't know. We'll see. But that's Facebook's going to be around for a while. That's
Well, it's where us old people go, right?
Yeah, and Instagram's going to be around for a while. But there's also SolarianGames.com.
True.
We don't update that website very often because who goes to websites anymore?
I do.
You can. That's where
I'm the weirdo.
But that's where our storage. You can buy all our stuff there. Yeah. I think we have a drive-through, but I'm not 100% sure.
So, what's the Solarian Games website URL web address?
Solarian Games GAMES.com.
Okay.
And then there's a store button. Hit the store button.
Hit the store.
Because then it's like store
dot blah blah blah. Yeah, yeah.
And then you can buy everything there, and it's automated shipping and everything. So when you buy it, we just get an email.
Yeah.
It goes to our warehouse, and then the warehouse sends it out to you.
They just pick it up and do that.
And we also have, this is something I've been working on, if you have a store, if you have a game store, I've been working on getting our game store market up.
Oh, cool.
So that if you're a game store, you can buy directly from us at wholesale.
Yeah.
So you buy it for like what we bought it for.
Okay.
Pretty much. I think we make a little tiny somewhat. I don't know. That's actually... Everything we have in there, I don't have anything to put in the store.
It's a Jason thing, right?
It'd be Jason or James because they both have products that we're selling.
Yeah, doing through there.
So they would know. I'm assuming we make whatever the standard profit is.
I'm sure you do.
Because wholesale is half of what retail is.
Yes.
And then I think manufacturing is half of what wholesale is.
Oh, maybe.
I think that's how it works. I think it's pretty much if you charge $10 for a game, you're going to make $2.50 off of it.
Okay.
It's going to cost $2.50 to make.
Yeah.
You'll make $2.50. Yeah. You'll sell it for $5 to the store.
Sale, yeah.
And the store will make $10 off it.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that's how that works.
It might be, yeah.
Not always, but
no, but the rule standard, yeah. Okay.
I'm Peter Bryant on Facebook. I don't friend people that I don't know too much.
Well,
sometimes a little bit. But you can always follow me. I also have a Facebook page, Blix Bryant, which I do some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Follow me there. I do some. I screw around with like AI art. I don't do it professionally. It's just a hobby for me. It's fun. And I post the cool ones that I make.
You do.
But it's not, again, that's not going in our books.
No.
We don't use it for our books.
And I know AI art for many people is very controversial. Right. We're going to cover it on another episode of the show.
For me, it's just fun. I just do it because it's fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's my hobby. Not my hobby, but it's a hobby.
It's something you do. Yeah, it brings you a little joy.
You know, I love technology. I love the fact that we're in the future. And, yeah. So I will say I have used it as a tool before to like get like an idea for how I'm going to lay something out or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't use it.
Cool.
Oh, and I do acting. You'll see that.
Yes.
I don't want to get into that. It's a whole show.
No, that's another thing. Yeah.
It's crappy indie actor.
Not crappy. It's indie acting. Is Steve here?
Steve
the convention this.
Steve what? Was coming, but he couldn't make it. He got sick.
Oh
and
man.
And while he was feeling better, he like it was like right very at the end he just started feeling better.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't want to bring.
No, you want to take the time. You feel better and yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you want to check his stuff out,
it's Steve Wallet, amazing.
Steve Wallet, Nerd Rage. Oh, he changed the name.
He did change the name.
Damn it. Something.
He did an award-winning documentary that I'm in and you're in.
Yeah. And I was in his full-length film as a, as a devil. And I've been in a couple of his shorts.
So. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. It's like another indie thing. Another thing I don't make.
No, but you do it for fun.
God, if I could just make some money at all this stuff I'm doing, it'd be great.
Making money? Wow, that's unusual. That
would be awesome if I could make something. It's all good, though. It's all fun.
Cool. Well, that's all I have. Any last words you want to share with anyone?
No, just keep having fun, make stuff, keep being creative. I love creative people. I love when people create stuff. Be my competition, please.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, you guys are mostly war game watchers. I would say that More Blood is almost a war game.
Okay.
It's what we call a skirmish game.
Yeah, it fits.
There's a map. There are figures.
Mm-hmm.
There are characters. But the characters are not really super well developed. They are just they tell you what you can do, and they're cool, and it's fun, but they're not like full-on, like full-blown characters.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of a LARP element to it too.
People like that,
right? So I don't know, keep an eye out for it.
Cool. Well, I want to remind everyone you can keep up to date with us. We're on all the things as Wargaming Recon, so you can find us everywhere there. Thank you so much, Pete, for being on the show.
Thanks for having
me. Really appreciate you taking the time for doing this. And I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. Be sure to come back next time with a new episode. And you know the drill. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're thinking, what setting can I use for my own Razor game? You know that you gotta. You need to. You have to. That's right. Keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is sponsored by the Historical Gaming Club of Uxbridge. They meet the first Wednesday of each month at Great Stories in Wittensville, Massachusetts. Dice drop at 7 p.m. on games spanning World War II to the Wild West and beyond. Guest demos are encouraged. All are welcome. Find them on Facebook at Historical Game Club of Uxbridge. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They put on the Huzzah Convention. Huzzah is happening at the Doubletree in Portland, Maine from May 19th to the 21st, 2023. Come play war games featuring epic historical battles, have fun at a sci-fi and fantasy game, or dig into some board games at Huzzah. Visit mhwa.info for more information.